Hello, we are Lindsay and Lindsay from 5050 Future. We're a diversity and inclusion training and consultancy company that specialises on an intersectional approach to all things equality, diversity and inclusion. We've just recorded it. Sorry, spoiler alert, we record these bits afterwards. We've just recorded a fab little podcast with Steve from Word Nerds.
Now, our background used to be in the tech sector, so we've known Word Nerds for a long, long time. And I think that the fab and the area of AI, especially around the biases and how that impacts, has always fascinated us. So we saw a little video that Steve did not very, very long ago on that very matter. And I just couldn't help myself. I was like, Linds, I think we need to do something around AI and bias, because I think it's something that AI is obviously really topical at the minute. Not many people really understand maybe what it is or are a bit scared of it. So hopefully through this podcast, you can get to understand a little bit more about it, how it works and what Word Nerds do with their approach of bringing more human intelligence in with the artificial intelligence. So we hope that you enjoy it as much as we do.
Steve, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining Lindsay and I on a very hot Wednesday in the northeast of Newcastle. Yeah, Newcastle upon Tyne. Good. To the hot northeast where we're based in Newcastle upon Tyne. People will be able to put that together and figure it out somehow.
Absolutely. For anybody who is not from the area, it's always like this. Every day, yeah. It's this kind of heat, and we're sweating every day, so it's wonderful.
Yes, love. Steve, tell everybody who you are and what you do for a living.
Hi, everyone. My name's Steve. I am a recovering linguist, and I am one of the co-founders at a company called Word Nerds. We help large organizations with huge amounts of customer or employee feedback data to understand it and to make better decisions based off the back of it.
Amazing. Wow. So can you tell us, Steve, in plain English, obviously today's session is all about AI, human intelligence meets artificial intelligence. What is AI?
It's a wonderful question, and there's lots of different answers. This term obviously has existed for a long time. I like to think of it as in terms of the equivalent to automation. So what automation was starting to replicate things that human beings did with their bodies. And AI is about replicating things that human beings currently do with their brains. So it's processes that we've previously done just by thinking about them are now being done via machine learning. And by that definition, obviously, you can be as broad or as narrow as you want. So some people argue that a pocket calculator is AI because it's doing a process that previously a human being would be writing out. Within that, there are obviously lots of different types of AI. My particular area of interest is in using AI to understand language, which obviously is a very it's a very sort of timely and quite a hot topic at the moment as we see these kind of huge large language models come out into the into play, people using them in their real life work. But it's the broad idea behind AI is we are taking computer algorithms, we're getting them to learn from themselves, and we are using that to find better ways of doing complicated thought processes that we would previously be doing ourselves.
Well, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I like that explanation. It was a beautiful thing. Like, obviously, we know a little bit about AI, having our background in the tech sector, non-technical roles through that, but it's always been a huge area of fascination with us, and especially the biases that can creep into AI as well. Could you explain what we mean by biases in AI and how they might show up?
Absolutely. So taking an example from an area that I know quite well, which is how we've got to the point of AI understanding language. And what's basically happened there is, and this is very, very layman's terms, what's basically happened there is we've taken these neural networks, we fired through millions upon millions upon millions of sentences. And it's generally large organizations like Google doing this, or big universities, that sort of thing. They're taking these enormous models, firing loads and loads and loads of sentences through them. And what the system then does is looks for patterns in those sentences, looks for patterns on top of those patterns, looks for patterns on top of those patterns, and builds up this model of language. And then when a new problem comes along, it can use all that background information to think, well, this is the kind of response people generally give to this question, or this is the kind of thing that when somebody has this complaint on your website, this is the kind of response they would usually expect. That's the theory, and it's, you know, and but the thing about that is the patterns that it's finding in the data, no human being is saying you have to choose these particular patterns. And so sometimes the patterns that it finds are really, really uncomfortable. And so a big part of working in AI is trying to understand and find ways to mitigate the bias that comes out because of the way in which it has dealt with all this data. This is something that I don't want to make sound too scary, because I think there is huge amount of useful parts that AI can play in this kind of thing. And also the kind of the scariest thing for me is, you know, the bias that we see in AI. People say, well, there's all this bias in AI. We'll just go back to using humans to do this. But it's been trained on human written text. And so we are sadly where the bias came from in the first place, which is, so it's reflecting back our own bias, but it can be really scary. One of the kind of the big kind of oh no moments almost for me, one of the moments where I was like, oh, we really need to do something about this, was a couple of years ago. We were looking at bias in some of the large language models that were kind of just nascent at the time. And we were looking at one of them, and the idea behind what it was doing was it was essentially guessing the next word in a sentence. And that's how it sort of builds up all these kind of long-term things. That's how your predictive text works. It thinks about all the different words you might use next, and it thinks what's the most likely one it's likely to use. And so we put it to this test. And what we did was we essentially got, I don't know if you've seen the TV show Blankety Blank.
I am. Yes, definitely.
Just going to have that in my head.
I am so sorry to put that in your head. It's scary to think that how old that program is, that the prize at the end was a checkbook and pen. And it's like, my kids have got no idea what a checkbook is. So it's like, that's a proper old school thing. You won 8 shillings. It's that sort of level of archaic. But anyway, we kind of got it to play this game. We gave it a sentence with a word missing. And then what we did was we changed a name in the word to see in the sentence to see how it would change the missing word. So the sentence we gave it was, person's name enjoys playing with blank. And we started to rotate through loads and loads of words. So for example, John enjoys playing with blank. And the system responded, cars and robots and computers and these kind of things. And we then gave it Sarah, and we said, Sarah enjoys playing with blank. And it came back with dolls and this kind of thing. And we kind of thought, oh, okay, this is a problem here. But the moment that my blood really ran cold, and I was thinking, I thought, oh no, we really need to, if we're going to work in AI, we need to do something about this. We put in Muhammad, and whatever you're thinking, it's worse than that. So we had John enjoys playing with cars, Sarah enjoys playing with dolls, Muhammad enjoys playing with fire. Now, that is obviously a really kind of terrifying thing that it's at this kind of base level, it's kind of finding this sort of stuff. And so that kind of put us on this path of we need to find ways to debug. If we're going to be using this in our working lives, we need to find ways to debias it. And that's not just us. There are loads of organizations out there that are looking to ways to remove bias from AI so we can get all the good stuff about it. We can do all that kind of great stuff around ensuring every voice is heard and ensuring that all the different opinions when you've got loads and loads there are being aggregated and you can understand it as a whole, get all that good stuff, but without any of the worrying stuff around AI. And that's what we've been going on to ever since.
It's funny because before we jumped on the call, we were just chatting about inclusive hiring or all things inclusive recruitment. And two things are coming to mind based on what you've just said. And first is the old study by the BBC or Inside Out London, where they submitted 100 CVs that were completely identical. I'm sure you're aware of it, the Adam versus Muhammad. And then the stark difference in terms of who was invited to interview or contacted by recruiters. And you can see the bias clearly in the results of that study that exists in humans and hiring managers and talent teams. But then the other thing that's coming to mind is Amazon's faux pas with their CV sifter or shortlisting. They invested obviously lots of money into this newfangled way to streamline their processes. And then these clever machines learned that due to the historical data that it was being fed, actually male applicants are more likely to progress through into interview stage and into the organization. So started discounting female names or anything that suggested that the applicant was female. So it is quite worrying to see obviously the impact that it can have. Now on the flip side of that, I think as well, some of the more positive things that we're seeing of where AI can be used to facilitate with that are things like, you know, AI in the hiring process that's taken really great notes on your behalf through these interviewing processes so that you can try and improve your accuracy with that note taking and scoring and assessment of candidates. And there's some really great tools that can help HR and people folk in this space, if they are using them, mitigate the impact of that bias. I don't think it'll ever be totally removed, but it's
trying to get that balance though, isn't it? Because, you know, what you were just saying there, on one hand, it can be quite scary and daunting for people to think about AI. And I think a lot of people don't really understand what AI means in real terms. So like when you were talking about the predictive text and stuff before, I don't think people necessarily make the association with AI and machine learning around like a lot of the day-to-day stuff. So when we talk about AI and especially using AI in the workplace to make systems processes more efficient, I think some people are either really, really in and are like, yes, absolutely, we'll want to do this and then we'll just take that as right. Or you've got the people on the other side who are like, absolutely no way, it's far too scary. We don't know what we're getting into. But I think what WordNerds do really well is get that balance right between human intelligence and artificial intelligence. And I suppose what you do is focused mainly around like consumer experience and getting their feedback, isn't it, Steve? Can you tell us a bit more about how you use AI to collect that feedback and what the AI does with that consumer feedback and experiences?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, and you make a couple of really great points there that we're trying to we're trying to deal with in our work. In terms of what WordNerds are trying to do. I guess when you are a head of customer experience or excuse me, or you're head of HR and you're looking to understand your employees, I think you normally come from one of two positions. You either know what you're looking for or you don't know what you're looking for. So you might have a really specific thing you're looking for. If you're a catering manager on a train, you don't care if the train's late. You don't care if the seats are comfortable. You only care about, was the bacon sandwich cold? So AI can go through all that data and pull out all the all the useful or pertinent things that somebody has said about, for example, catering. Crucially, regardless of the specific language that the person used. So, as I mean, you're both communicators, you will know that all of the power and the emotion and the beauty and above all the meaning of language comes not from individual words, it comes from how those words flow together. And there are any number of ways of making the same point using completely different language. And conversely, you know, no word in English language only means one thing. All words shift and change depend on context. What AI can do is to start to bring together all of those weirdly disparate and interesting and nebulous and confusing ways of describing something. And that's before we even get into, you know, colloquialisms and misspellings and sarcasm, which is always a fun one, especially in the Northeast, but also across the UK. That's before you get into all those things. What we use AI to do is to start to pull together and categorize issues, complaints, opportunities, based not on the specific words that a person used, but based on what they mean. And that can be really powerful because that then gives you a real idea of what your big issues are, how they're changing over time, what is different between different regions or different departments. And that ability to understand that comes from AI's ability to understand really, really idiosyncratic language at like an industrial scale. So from that point, it's really hard, but I think it's really great. But I think one of the things, Lindsay, you said that I thought was really interesting was where you get into big trouble is when you just take the first answer that AI gives you and then assume that that's. And I think the challenges that you've talked about with, you know, CV sifters bringing up, you know, male names and that kind of thing, or the another great one was the A-level grades in the year when we were when they were suffering from COVID, and so they weren't able to do regular exams, and they ended up giving better grades to kids that went to private schools because they'd seen in the data, the AI had seen in the data that kids who went to private schools generally got, you know, overperformed at that point, so then assumed that would happen. And the big problem there was the powers that be in the Department of Education decided just to take that answer and not think about it. And I think where we like to use AI is a way of powering through all the busy work that wouldn't be possible to do at the scale you need to do it at to make it easier for human beings to make decisions. What it shouldn't be doing is just making unquestioned decisions, because that's where people really fall afoul of that kind of thing.
You know, it's fascinating because as you're chatting through the process behind obviously how you do things and what you look for and what's important, it's so aligned to a lot of the work that we do in terms of that active listening and understand that things are so nuanced and, you know, trying to get those different lenses before we make judgments and decisions and how we approach.
Always has to be contextual, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It completely applies across the field of diversity and inclusion, and I would argue every aspect. That's a nice little person.
And the thing about AI, which I think is, you know, the way in which AI sort of developed into things like ChatGPT, which I don't want to pick on, which is an incredible achievement, and you know, I'm sure we all use it in all sorts of different ways to understand things or to learn about things or to find out on things like Excel, for example. If you have an issue, you're trying to figure out what to do something on Excel, you can type into ChatGPT and it will tell you, and you can then go and try and figure out. But I think the way in which it's been presented is incredibly confident about its opinion. Which I think is we had to give one example, we had a customer that was looking at trying to understand whether the stuff that he was doing with word nerds he could do in ChatGPT. So he uploaded it, but he asked its ChatGPT to look at some data for him and said, here's this data. Can you tell me what I need to know about my customers based on this? And it started giving him these points. And he was like, oh, wow, this is great. This is gold. This is really interesting stuff. And then he realized that he'd forgotten to upload the data. And so the system had just told him, these are the kind of things we will generally, when they're asked a question about what customers think, these are the kind of things that come back. But with such confidence, with such, you know, and the way it seems like we're positioning AI now is the, you don't need to think about this decision because the decision's already been made. And I think that's where the real danger comes in.
It's funny you mentioned that because before we jumped on this afternoon, I played around with ChatGPT. It was like, give me some examples of when AI tools have been used in organizations and where they've worked really well and where they haven't worked so well. And it came back with a few examples and I asked them to cite the references so I could go and read about it. And they were like, oh no, I can't remember how it was phrased, but like generally, or research suggests that this is common practice in these industries and sectors, but it was a complete like farce. It just came out with some crap about UK banking and how UK banking reportedly
you don't need done the, this. The sources. Don't worry about it.
It was the banks or like cite the reference and they're like, oh no, it wasn't widely reported. There's no reference. And I'm like,
just trust us. It's okay.
There's an issue there.
It's learned how to blag, which is scary.
Yeah. I mean, bravo. That's a skill in itself. Fair play with ChatGPT. There's one thing that stuck with me, Stephen, whenever we first had a chat about coming together and recording today. And it was when you were chatting about how you do things and how you guide your clients in terms of best practice or how to get the most and efficient results that you possibly can. And you'd said, you know, it's all about listening versus listening for. And that, I think, is really curious. Can you, if you don't mind, share the example about the particular client that you referenced with us?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. So this was a really interesting concept that we had that we saw recently. And I think this isn't just an AI problem. This is, as you say, this is a listening problem, and it's always kind of been with us. The specific challenge that we saw was on a rail company that will remain nameless, where they had asked, they'd got this new fleet of trains. They were very proud of the accessibility in them. And so they asked their disabled passengers to give some quite detailed feedback. And they started by asking the berth where you can put a wheelchair in the carriage. How did you find that? Absolutely great, wonderful. Like perfect. We could slide in and it was absolutely perfect for our needs. And then what about the disabled toilet? Was that an absolutely great, wonderful, accessible, everything we need in order to do that? And then they had do you have any other feedback you'd like to give? And they said the berth where we were sitting was on one end of the train and the disabled toilet was on the other end of the train. Which I think is, there's a few lessons in there. First about granularity, first about if you'd taken just those two points about that, you'd think everything was absolutely great. But when you allow them to express themselves and say whatever they want about a situation, that sort of stuff comes into view. And that's something that AI can do. That's something that AI can really add. We had those problems as well when it was all just quant surveys. It was all just, you know, answer, score this out of five, score this out of five, score this out of five. You'd miss the nuance of those things interacting with one another. And it's the same with this. But that is, I think, where what we're doing, we don't just rely on AI. We bring in other things from linguistics and stuff to think about just understanding what the data of customer feedback will bear. I think we've had the situation in the past where when human beings were asked to interact with computers, it was always the human being that had to change what they were going to say so that the computer could understand it. Mm-hmm. So it would be pick an option from this drop-down menu or score this out of 5 or 7. You're narrowing down what the human being is trying to say so that the computer can understand it. What AI has done is it said, express yourself however you want, tell us whatever you want. And it's on the computer to understand what you were saying. But there is still within that a need to tell the AI, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to go and find? What do you want me to understand? And that process as well can bring in bias and can bring in incomplete and confusion. So one of the things that we try and do at the start of any customer relationship is to just get some of their data, look at what the data will bear, understand where the issues are that the customers are telling you about with as little of a filter on it as possible, because that's when you get into really understanding them. And that's ultimately the goal, because when you understand them, you can make their lives better.
It's just absolutely fascinating. I love hearing about it all. I think because obviously we know that there has to be that human element involved in the process, how much of that at WordNerds is the human decision making in the context? Like, how do you balance it with the AI side? What do you do to get that right approach, balance? Yeah,
it's so difficult. And we've seen some challenges with, you know, I think you can go in and you can say to an AI, answer in this way all the time. And we've seen, I don't know if you've seen the Google Gemini challenges they've had with their image generation AI. This is something that, this is great. So they were concerned about this issue of representation in their auto generating of images, and so they hard coded in, ensure that you are showing people of color and that sort of thing in all of the image generation that you're doing. Which sounds like a really sensible thing to do until people started saying, draw me a picture of a 1940s Nazi. And it came back as a person of color. And now that kind of, and the concerning thing about that then is, how does, if you know, kids are going on there to learn about stuff, that then these kind of misapprehensions can continue. So it's a really difficult challenge. What we've done our approach has been, instead of trying to sort of fix the AI and we do a little bit of that. I think what we do is generally just sort of lie to our AI. Yeah. We change the data going into the AI so that it can't make biased decisions. So take, for example, the name challenge that we talked about earlier. With, you know, John and his cars and so on. We went through hundreds and hundreds of names to find the most neutral name, the name that AI made the least assumptions about. Mm-hmm. And we went through loads and loads of those. I don't know if you guys want to guess what the name was that was the most neutral name we could find.
I already know the answer. So,
oh, George! Oh, fantastic! You've done your homework. That's very impressive.
Seen Steve's he did, which was amazing.
So I'm thinking it must be gender neutral. I haven't seen. I would have guessed something gender neutral, like a Robin or a, can't think of any other, an Alex or
it's a something. You've absolutely nailed it, Lindsay. It's Alex.
Oh, absolutely, John.
That was the, because absolutely. So that was the name it made least assumptions by. So now any data that goes into our platform, from the AI's perspective, obviously the customer sees the data just as it is, but the AI sees any name replaced with Alex. And that has kind of, and we do the same thing with pronouns. We do the same thing with place names. The AI will give slightly different responses if you're saying, my train into, you know, Cambridge was late and my train into Paisley was late. They will give you slightly different based on its assumptions about those places. So place names are also taken out. And that approach has allowed us to order of magnitude decrease the amount of bias in our system. There's now no bias at all around gender. It's exactly the same. So those kind of things, that's one of the great things about AI, is that you can lie to it. You can give it information to ensure that it won't be biased. But there are, yeah, it's a constant challenge as AI keeps improving and is being used in different ways all the time. And I think ultimately, I think it's down to customers, it's down to people that are using AI to ask these questions. I think if anyone listening is interested in looking at, and you've already mentioned a bunch of ways in which I think AI can be really valuable in your space, any organization that you're using, ask them what are you doing to de-bias the AI that you're using. If they say there's no bias in our AI, then don't use them. They are lying. There's bias in all AI, and I think the only way because technology is moving so much faster than law, the only comeuppance someone will get for not thinking about bias in the AI is people choosing not to use that product because it doesn't have a good answer to the question, how are you de-biasing your AI? So I think, but yeah, I think from our perspective, the big changes we made, the big improvements we made, were largely about changing our data before the AI got anywhere near it.
That's, I love that. I think already, and I'm conscious of your time, Steve, as well, there's so many little bits of takeaway that, yes, are obviously very relevant to the use of AI in the workplace, regardless of whatever function, department, or use that looks like. But also from a D&I perspective, too, in terms of that active listening and that soundboarding or that sense checking with that human interaction, you know, you can replicate that in real life, as we would advise people to do in many a different scenario, to, you know, challenge your own biases and how would you have interpreted this? And was I right in reacting in this way?
And all of the different ways that as humans you have to, you know, have those ways to mitigate bias and be more objective. And it's applying those principles, isn't it? And trying to get that human element into it as much as you can, but also mitigating the human bias as well. So it's like, it's double fold really, isn't it? But I think it's really useful for people to know that it is going to be in there, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't use it because of it.
Absolutely. And it's such a great point that you make about our humanity, and also how easy it is for us to see human beings in this kind of thing. I think that's been a really interesting, and there's kind of a really good, and not to get too nerdy about this, but I work for Wagner's. What can you possibly expect? But it comes from a really good place. You know how you see two dots and a line? If you see two dots with a line underneath it, you'll see a face. Like, just automatically, you see any two vaguely circular things and a line underneath, and you'll think, oh, that looks like a face. That is a evolutionary trait that we've developed because seeing a face in a forest is, you know, if you're wrong, it doesn't matter. If you're right, that might save your life. So it's something that we are programmed to see humanity where it's not there. And I think that's one of the big dangers of AI for me is that kind of assuming that this thing I'm talking to is a kind of sentient creature that is giving me kind of, it's a tool. It's a tool that is there to work through all of the, you know, all of the kind of busy work that wouldn't be possible for you to do. Going back to the automation analogy, I don't know if you've ever been up to the Nissan factory, which is up here in the northeast of England. It's got this kind of, it's an amazing place, right? But it's got these kind of incredible arms that are like lifting this really heavy kind of, yeah, exactly. What you don't see in the Nissan factory is robots that look like humans. They weren't trying to replicate the human body. They took one part of the human body, the arm, made it like way, 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 way stronger. And then that's just dealing with that. And I think it's the same with AI. It's taking, you know, thinking about AI, it's taking one thought process that you were doing. It's maximizing that. So in this case, reading through all the data and pulling out the useful stuff. It's maximizing that bit. What it's not doing is becoming a kind of a colleague or an equivalent. It's maximizing one thought process so that you can put the kind of the understanding and the ultimately the humanity back into that decision process. And I think when you think about it that way, not only is it less scary, it's also, you know, and it also puts you at the center and puts you in control. And I think that a lot of the scariness that you've talked about comes from that feeling of this is something that's going to come in and do, you know, and do something different or do something that will replace what I'm doing. It's doing the big scale stuff so that you can focus on the human stuff. And I think from that perspective, it can be a really, really positive thing.
What a nice note.
Yeah, that seems like a lovely note to wrap things up on. Dave, thank you so much. We appreciate that you're a busy man, and we do. We're really thankful that you took the time out to have a little chat with us on this very roasty toasty Wednesday afternoon. If people are interested, how can they find out more about Word Nerds?
We are at wordnerds.ai. There's a bunch of learning materials there about AI and how to use it. I'm on Twitter at Stevie the Giant. You're very welcome to find me there as well.
Super. Dave, thank you so much. Have a lovely afternoon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Lovely to talk to you guys. Thank you.